This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
I think we need to ask, what is it about our thinking underlying both the good and bad coming from that way of approaching the natural world? What is it that we can learn to do differently so we can find a more balanced future for humanity?
As we move into a new year and try to square 2017 in our rearview mirrors, it's an opportune moment to contemplate how we avoid repeating the mistakes of the past, both recent and ancient. This week on Sea Change Radio, we get philosophical with Jeremy Lent, whose new book, The Patterning Instinct, seeks to explain what has made us tick as a species over the millennia. We talk about what the patterning instinct is, what we can learn from these human patterns, and how we can apply them to fight climate change. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Jeremy Lent. Jeremy is an author and the founder of the Leology Institute. Jeremy, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you, Alex.
Your new book is called The Patterning Instinct, A Cultural History of Humanity's Search for Meaning. In a nutshell, can you define what you mean by the patterning instinct? What is that instinct?
Yeah, sure, Alex. So the patterning instinct is really an instinct that is unique to humans, or at least unique to the extent that we have it to a far greater degree than any other animal. And it's this instinct we have to pattern meaning into the universe. And it's one, we know it's an instinct because just a newly born baby starts hearing sounds, and before long, nobody teaches her, to learn language, but she begins to pattern the meaning of all the sounds and touch and everything into her own language. And we have this all through our lives. So if we say it's a first day on the job, we walk into an office, we instantly look at who's up, who's down. We sort of put a pattern of meaning into whatever we're doing. And back in the very beginning of human evolution, when we first developed language and culture, humans looked out at the universe and tried to pattern meaning into it. They looked at the stars and put like constellations. And it's through that patterning instinct that we developed technology, that we developed culture. Basically, all of human history has been a result of that instinct that we humans have.
And you think in many ways that this instinct, while giving birth in many ways to humanity's relative success on this planet, could lead to its demise in some ways. Why don't you connect the dots, if you will?
Sure, yeah. Well, that's what's so profoundly important and interesting about this, is that that instinct has given humans as a group this incredible power over the natural world, which has led really from the earliest times of human history to imbalances between what humans do and the rest of the world, all the way from hunter-gatherer times onwards. It wasn't like there was some sort of golden age when that wasn't true. And so while that instinct has given us this incredible power to create the technological civilization we have right now, it's also the same kind of empowerment that has led to these incredible environmental imbalances that could potentially drive our whole civilization to the precipice if we're not more aware of it. But the thing about that patterning instinct is that it does lead to different ways of finding meaning from our world. And so a lot of what my book is about is exploring how there are certain ways of finding meaning that can lead to more of these imbalances, can lead to more destruction than others.
Can you give us some examples?
Sure. Well, I think that probably the most significant thing we can look at is really starting back in the 17th century in Europe. Is really the foundation of what we can think of right now as modern cognition, or the sort of modern worldview, which was based, it really got sort of seeded by the scientific revolution. which was this incredible, powerful, like, sense of, well, it's amazing what humans can do with when we apply our reason to understanding the natural world. But it also created these sort of patterns of meaning around sort of core myths or metaphors, if you will, of conquering nature or seeing nature as a machine. And those are the sort of foundational myths of our modern world, which have given us this incredible power of technology that we all love and use all the time. And by looking at nature in that way, looking at humans as being fundamentally like separate from nature, it leads us to really make decisions and have values as a collective culture, you know, that are consuming the earth at this unsustainable rate.
Yes, you write it in your book, you draw the parallel between the Roman Empire's demise and the potential collapse of modern civilization. And the parallel is that Rome's fuel was essentially conquest. And at some point, that conquest kind of became less and less valuable with each conquest. And today, our civilization is fueled by fossil fuels largely, and the marginal cost is becoming greater and greater, and the payoff is less and less as the easy oil evaporates.
That's completely right. And the kind of process that you were just describing, that I kind of go into in some detail in that last chapter, is actually something that got fleshed out a lot by a brilliant anthropologist called Joseph Tainter, who actually wrote a book, has spent a lot of his life studying how civilizations collapse. So Rome is the most kind of obvious example, but actually the same patterns apply to every civilization in history, pretty much. And what he explores at the sort of more abstract level, if you will, is that the way that civilizations begin to develop and build is they invest in complexity, and they find an energy source. And like you say, with Rome, it was conquering nations. Back in the Mesopotamian days, it was like discovering the powers of irrigation. And for us, it's really been fossil fuels. And you sort of mine that resource, but there's a certain point at which your return on investment in that complexity begins to go down. So you have to work harder and harder. Kind of basically, it's like a sort of treadmill when you run faster and faster just to stay in the same place. And that leads to more and more fragility to the whole system until at some point, just the smallest thing can actually lead to the whole thing come crashing down. The kind of terrifying thing about that is that if it is this kind of almost like a law of energy flows, then how do we as a civilization get out of it? There are people, you know, who look at this kind of dynamic who argue technology is the solution. And so that's something that I also explore in some detail. Is it possible that technology is the way to sort of break this kind of cycle that Tainter describes?
Well, looking back at history, you can draw parallels with technologies that seemed a lot less exciting to us in the modern age. But if you look at the patterns of how technology has informed human history, it's a little more haphazard than we might think, isn't it?
Well, that is just so true. And I think that what we see with technology is a couple of things. One is called the Jevons paradox, which is simply that whenever we come up with a technical solution to a resource constraint, rather than not having to use that resource as much as before, we end up using that resource to the max and then expand it to something else. And so that was something, Jevons was an economist in the 19th century who discovered that. And that's one of the reasons why technology doesn't actually solve resource constraint issues. But I think even more fundamental was the kind of point you said, that technology has a way of producing unintended consequences. So in fact, many of the major solutions are, many of the major problems our civilization is looking at right now tend to have been solutions to earlier problems. And so much of our environmental issues right now arising as unintended consequences from the so-called Green Revolution of the 60s and 70s, which used, you know, nitrogen-based fertilizers, which now lead to the dead zones and the erosion of topsoil. And, of course, a significant amount of climate change is due to the the big agribusiness. So these are some of the fundamental issues about using technology to solve these problems, when really we have to look at more kind of systemic solutions rather than techno solutions, I think.
That's what the people say. And if we can make it through tomorrow, better make it through.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to author Jeremy Lent. His new book is called The Patterning Instinct. So speaking of the evolution of technology and the haphazard nature of it, why don't we go back to 600 years ago when Admiral Zhang set off from China with this amazing armada in 1405. He had 300 ships and he went on a 30-year voyage. He reached Africa, but it really didn't have the impact on world history that a much smaller, much less well-funded exploration like the Columbus voyage to the New World had, with just like three rinky-dink little ships. Why is this important, and explain how it informs the patterning instinct?
Yeah, you know, I think this is one of the most fascinating kind of moments in history, if you will, that back then in the 15th century. And in a way, it's this kind of moment of truth of how the different ways in which cultures make sense of the universe really kind of drives history. And so, you know, so to your point, we all know that Christopher Columbus discovered the New World in 1492, and he had these three little sort of dinky boats which barely made it across the ocean. And decades earlier, at the beginning of the 15th century, this admiral that you just referred to, Admiral Zhang of China, he had this massive armada of about 300 gigantic boats, and any one of those boats, you could have fit one of Columbus, you could have fit 10 of Columbus's boats into one of his. It's like this incredible difference in size. He had about 30,000 people in his armada, and he essentially owned the whole Indian Ocean. He, over decades, went to East Africa, Arabia, Sri Lanka, and so he could have, if he had had this kind of mindset that Columbus and the people who followed Columbus had, he could have enslaved the populations, established this gigantic Chinese empire, mined every one of these areas for ore. But he didn't do any of that, because the Chinese view, basically, of how you make sense of the world and their view of how you use technology and how you use power was more to maintain an equilibrium. They saw the whole role of humans in the world as kind of harmonizing with the natural forces around them. And of course, in the West, we had a very different approach to the use of power and technology. Back in the 17th century, Francis Bacon, who was the sort of triumphalist, if you will, of the scientific revolution, famously said, you know, knowledge itself is power. And a lot of the Western approach is based on that. Like, when they would discover new scientific discoveries or inventions, or when they came across new territories, their instant response was, how can we exploit this to the max? How can we use this as a resource for our own gain, rather than how can we sort of establish some new kind of equilibrium. So it's a very different way of looking at the sort of human use of power and technology. And you could say, you know, some people said, well, right, that was successful. That's led to this kind of Western domination of the world. It's led to all the technology and the and everything that we enjoy today. And it's also led to some of these imbalances. So a lot of my book goes into this exploration of these, not to try to paint one approach to the world as being good and the other as being bad, but one approach as leading to imbalances which at this point in our society's trajectory could be truly existential risks. And that's where maybe we can learn from other ways of looking at the use of technology in humanity's relationship with the natural world.
Yes, Yuval Harari in Sapiens talks about another voyage, which I think is interesting as well in terms of the randomness sometimes of the technology. He spends a lot of time talking about Captain John Cook's voyage to the Pacific Islands and how that led to, in many ways, the European domination of the next several centuries, kind of trying to understand why Europe was the dominating continent during the Age of Enlightenment. There were lots of other technological breakthroughs being made in places like China, but for some reason, Europe was at the forefront. Maybe you can speak towards that.
Sure, absolutely. And really, for the last few decades, the mainstream approach to understanding history was really set the trail got set, if you will, by Jared Diamond's great book called Guns, Germs, and Steel. And Yuval Harari's Sapiens kind of follows that tradition a little bit, which follows a notion of what's called geographic determinism, which basically says that humans everywhere are pretty much the same. And the way history is worked out is simply a matter of the geography of who happened to be where, when. And there are certain elements to the geography of Eurasia that allowed that Eurasian continent to develop faster than other parts of the world. And that approach to history itself was a great step forward from the old sort of triumphalist Eurocentric approach, which said, you know, basically barely veiled racism, believing that the white man and the European culture was superior to the rest of the world, and that's why Europe got to be so dominant. So it was a great step forward, but what it did was kind of miss, if you will, another really important element of what drives history, which is these cultural differences. And that's why, you know, when we look at that period back in the 15th century, China, as you say, actually had far greater, far more advanced technology than Europe. But my understanding and my kind of what I explore in the book is that there was something in this European mindset that led to this approach of power, exploitation, and essentially disrupting, changing the rules of the game in order to kind of exploit whatever is there. And we see that both in terms of how they exploited populations, human populations, as well as natural resources. And those are the values that have become really endemic to our global culture, so much so that now many of us just take them for granted. And we actually think that that is human nature, when it's actually rather an idiosyncratic sort of cultural development that just arose in Europe and doesn't necessarily apply to other cultures.
Now, I want to unpack that together in a second and connect that to where we are as a species right now and with the specter of climate change hanging above our heads. But let's stick just for a second more to the Cook exploration, because Captain Cook's voyage was unique in that it loaded up on scientists. This was not something that Admiral Zhang's voyage in 1405 had. This had biologists and other scientists on board. And so we often look at Cook's decision to bring those scientists aboard as a kind of a bellwether for European expansion, because they cracked the code of scurvy during that. Everybody was kind of limited in their ability to explore because much of the crew would die. But finally, they figured out that vitamin C and limes and citrus fruits could keep their crews alive. So we look at that as, oh, this was some great technological breakthrough. But in the haphazardness of it all was that they also brought with them diseases to these Pacific Islands and other areas that decimated populations and allowed for more exploitation and conquering.
That's right. And that's a pattern we see all through the centuries of European expansion. We see this kind of, you know, these kind of unintended consequences that come about. And we're still seeing it right now with the rise in globalization and, you know, species that move from one continent to another. And so it's really a pattern over centuries that has just become even more kind of expansive across the world is as a result of the power that humans generated from that scientific revolution leading to the Industrial Revolution in Europe over those core centuries, we've created these amazing disruptions in the world, which again is not to say that there's something bad or evil about these steps in the sort of human journey, if you will, but it does lead us, I think we need to ask, what is it about our thinking underlying both the good and bad coming from that way of approaching the natural world? What is it that we can learn to do differently so we can find a more balanced future for humanity? Because that's the existential question facing us right now. You know, I mean, we just need to look at, for example, just last month, 15,000 scientists from across the world put out a second warning to humanity that unless we change direction very drastically, we're really facing an absolute, which just moving into this brick wall against the natural resources and essentially facing the risk of collapse. And that was the second warning because the first one came out 25 years earlier, but the numbers have just continued to move in the wrong direction since then. And it's something we have to be just increasingly aware of, is that it's not just climate change. There's a whole slew of other major areas of overshoot that we're facing right now.
Just a slice of copper moon over the ocean.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to author Jeremy Lent. His book is called The Patterning Instinct. So, Jeremy, we were talking about the bedrock of civilization being this patterning instinct, and hand in hand with the birth of agriculture, we see expansion of what we know as civilization. You argue that agriculture really was a double-edged sword. Yes, it allowed our species to multiply in ways that we could never have seen possible thousands of years ago. But that has come with a steep cost in terms of overpopulation and income inequality. How can we, or can we, fundamentally shift as a society in order to stop the inexorable issues in terms of resource, fossil fuel use, and climate change? Will we be able to pivot on a dime, if you will, to try to roll back some of the deep-seated problems that our civilization is built upon?
Yes, I think this is one of the most important questions that we can ask right now as we look at where our civilization is heading. And I do think it's possible for us to see that direction shifting in a way that leads to more sustainable flourishing. But I think to do so, we have to look at the deeper levels. It's a little bit like it's not enough just to fix the sort of bugs, if you will, in the system that we've created, but we have to go at the level of the operating system itself of our sort of global system and look at how we can shift some of these underlying values. And I think when we look at what are these underlying values that need to change, something that I see as the kind of at the deepest level is many of the values that our society is built on right now, things that we take for granted, are built on sort of concepts of separation, like separation of humans from the natural world. And in fact, seeing all of the particular issues we're dealing with as being separate technological issues, rather than seeing them as being connected. And seeing humans, each of us themselves, as being separate individuals. And we're told that we're selfish. And that's just part of the intrinsic nature of what humans are. And therefore, the whole sort of capitalist system works best because it's the most efficient way in which we can all pursue our selfish ends for our own gains. And many of these myths are really, again, actually came from Western thought, and some of them really got kind of seeded back in that scientific revolution timeframe. And they're really not what scientists right now looking at evolutionary biology or anthropology actually recognize is true about humans or about the world. And so I think the ways in which we can shift things at the more fundamental level is recognize values arising more from a sense of connection, a sense of humans as actually being connected with the natural world. We ourselves are, in fact, part of nature. Or recognizing that what makes humans unique is not, in fact, some sort of selfish instinct, but, in fact, our cooperativeness. And when humans first evolved as a sort of separate branch, it was our ability to cooperate together and to develop feelings and values rising out of things like that, like compassion, empathy, that made us unique and made us successful. And in fact, when we apply that sense of connection to understanding the technological problems we're facing, we get to look more at sort of systemic changes that are needed rather than sort of techno fixes to some of the biggest problems, whether it's climate change or resource constraints or whatever it might be.
Well, it's a fascinating read. It's called The Patterning Instinct. Author Jeremy Lent, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks. Been a pleasure, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Samford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by the Budos Band, Eric Clapton, and Tom Freund. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.